Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to M's the Word podcast.
Today, we're going to talk about our new life of sobriety, going from very heavy drinkers, who a couple who would identify themselves as big drinkers. We liked to drink, didn't we? Very hard stuff, like hard stuff, like vodkas and whiskies. Going from that to basically being preachy wellness wankers.
7 months sober, babes.
Yeah.
7 months.
It's not bad, is it?
I would like to talk more about the sober journey than being sober.
Should we talk about our drinking journey before we talk about the sober journey? So when did you start drinking?
Yeah. So basically, if you are someone who is, I like the term sober curious. If you are curious about a sober life, this could be a good one for you. Or if you are doing dry January, well done, because it is a difficult month to do dry. And yeah, if you need a cheerleader, this might be quite nice for you as well. But yeah, let's crack on.
So I started drinking when I was a teenager and then just didn't stop. I really liked how it made me feel. First of all, I was always surrounded by it. Like, I grew up with parents that drank a lot. I moved to Ireland and everyone there, like, the whole culture is basically just gravitates around going to the pub, and that's like what everyone does. So I couldn't wait. I remember being a teenager, early teenager, and being like, I can't wait till I'm 18 and I can legally go to the pub and drink. And I was so excited about drinking because it's such a cultural thing in Ireland, especially. And I just saw everyone around me doing it, and I was just really excited about drinking. And then when Alcopop started coming out, I started drinking the old hooches. I used to get people to go into the off-license for us, and there was always one off-license when I started drinking when I lived in Northern Ireland in somewhere called Hillsborough. There was at the top of the hill there was a little off-license, and we would sort of accost somebody, kind-hearted looking man or woman, and ask them if they wouldn't mind going in and getting us some hooch. And hooch was this kind of, I suppose, early Alcopops. It was very sugary, very sweet. I remember drinking it thinking, I cannot believe that this tastes so delicious, and it's making me feel like pissed. But it was basically just like syrup. If I drank it now, I'd probably be sick. But at the time, when you got, you know, your teenage taste buds, it tasted delicious. So we'd be knocking this stuff back left, right, and center, getting drunk, being debaucherous. And then it just carried on from there. I just kept drinking all through my 20s and 30s. Loved it, never thought about quitting. And I remember one time one of my best buddies, Ryan, said to me, I'm doing dry January. This was when I was sort of maybe about 26, 27. And I was like, what's that? And he said, I'm not drinking for the whole January. I remember being so shocked, being like, what are you talking about? Why would you ever do that? Why would you not drink? And then after that, it just sort of planted a seed in my head, and then I just left it. And then and many years later, we tried to do it, didn't we?
Yeah, I think for me, context with drinking was, I started drinking more in my like late teens, I think, not so early as you, but it was very much like a party thing. Like, that's just what my friends would do. If we went to like a house party or something, again, it would be the Alcopops, the WKD. If someone had like an older brother or sister, maybe we might get some vodka or something. But I would say my drinking, like proper drinking, really started at university. And I feel like it was when I went, how long ago now? Gosh, it must have been over a decade ago. It was very ingrained in society, I guess, that when you went to university, you did these big like freshers weeks, everyone got really drunk. It was a real thing that you kind of just gathered with your friends to do. And looking back now, I'm like, really, that's all we did together. Like, we obviously lived together and stuff, but we wouldn't like go and do activities together or whatever. It was more, our whole friendship was kind of centered around like where we were going to go out and what we were going to drink and what we were going to wear and that type of thing. And then in my early 20s, when my mum passed away, I think my relationship with alcohol changed in a way that I was kind of obviously going through this huge grief in my life and felt very lost. And so I feel like that was really when my relationship changed, in terms of I felt like I would drink because I wanted to numb everything. Like I couldn't deal with how I felt, or didn't want to deal with how I felt. So when I did drink, it was to get drunk. It wasn't to be sociable or to enjoy anything. It was just to be, not feel anything, basically. And then, yeah, kind of a couple of years passed, and then I had kids, and obviously you can't drink during the 9 months. Found that very difficult always. But yeah, for me, I think it was really the first lockdown which made me want to readdress and kind of reflect on my relationship with alcohol, because I drank a lot in the first lockdown, and it was very sunny here in the UK. And every morning we would homeschool, and it would get to the afternoon and it would be like a lovely 20 degrees and the kids would be playing in the garden and I would just want a glass of wine. And I think that's really where, if I'm being very honest, that's really where I started to not like my drinking habits, because I felt like I craved it every day and I wanted it every day. And partly it was boredom and partly it was overwhelm of just being in that kind of situation where you're kind of a prisoner in your own home, I suppose. And yeah, so after that, I didn't feel good about how I was drinking and why I was drinking. And so Steph and I both started to do like a month on drinking and then a dry month. So we would basically be doing dry January every other month. We just kind of wanted to test the water in terms of like sober life and just challenge ourselves to see if we could actually do it, I think, didn't we? Some months it was much harder than others, just because there would be like social things going on where it would be somebody's birthday party or there'd be a wedding or a work event or something like that. And those are the kind of occasions where everyone just assumes that you drink. And you sometimes drink because you feel awkward in a social situation or whatever. So removing it completely and being in those situations, I think, was hard at the beginning.
Yeah. So how we've structured this podcast is we've written down all of the things that we loved about drinking and then all the things that we didn't love about drinking.
Yeah, so all the things that we found really hard, and some of them, to be honest, I still continue to find hard. And then we thought we'd leave it on a positive note.
Yeah, so it's really like we've just kind of written down very loose notes of like talking about various parts of drinking and drinking culture and our relationship with it. And I think we'll drill into each one of those things. But
do you know what I just randomly thought then would be a nice thing to talk about as well, which we haven't got on our list, is how it's changed our relationship with each other. Because I feel like for us, a big part of our relationship, especially at the beginning before we had children, was going out together and drinking and like, you know what I mean? That was like a big part of our lifestyle together. And I think it might be interesting for people to hear about how that's kind of evolved and changed and how it's affected us as a couple.
A lot, like you were saying before, like a lot of people use alcohol as like a binding agent for relationships with people. And there's many reasons for that. It's because actually just being around another human is quite triggering in terms of anxiety. Like it's quite difficult for a lot of people just to be around another human. And alcohol is a really effective way of numbing that intensity. You know, you don't really feel like that with close friends, but just people that you're not that close, like work colleagues and stuff like that. It's why work colleagues are desperate just to down a couple of drinks, just to make it, I think, a little bit easier to be around that other person. But for me, I kind of frame that as a challenge. It's like, okay, I want to feel uncomfortable in life, because I think that's where you get most of your benefits and growth, is feeling uncomfortable. So if I do feel awkward in an awkward situation because I'm not drinking, everybody else is, I'm like, good, bring it on. I want to feel like this. This is because I'm trying to you know, something needs to improve or change.
I feel like you're quite similar to me in those types of situations, though, where you feel like almost like a need to carry the conversation if it becomes quiet or awkward. And I think, actually, I think that's a lot easier to do when you haven't been drinking, because you're kind of, you're way more together and articulate than you would be if you'd had a couple glasses of wine, and you might say something really inappropriate or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're right what you said a while ago. Like, it was very much for us, like, how we, when we first started dating, we'd always be going out, we'd find some little old cute old man's pub, we'd get ourselves a little bottle of Prosecco or something like that, and we'd sit in the corner and we'd just chat all night over Prosecco. And for a while it was wonderful.
I think also that it is worth saying that we did a lot of that, but we also did other activities together, like daytime things, like we'd go like canoeing, or we'd go for walks, or we'd like, we did a lot of the other stuff as well, but that was a big part of our like dating life.
Now I you've had me use this analogy a few times, but
I'm gonna
see you die behind the eyes right now, but this is how I've explained it to a few people, and I think it's quite an accurate way to explain it. Like, when you're young and you drink, it's like if you go to the shops and you buy yourself a brand new sponge, and it's really spongy and nice, and you kind of soak up all the water with that sponge, and then if you were to wring it out, it's quite effective at soaking up water and wringing it out, and it kind of stays very sponge-like. But if you were to do that with the same sponge over 20 years of just soaking up water and then wringing it out over and over again, the sponge would just stop being as spongy and as nice and like effective at what it's supposed to do. It just kind of looks a bit ratty and awful after a while, and doesn't kind of absorb the water as well, and it just turns into a bit of a mess. And that's kind of what my body feels like with booze. I feel like that is kind of how I feel like alcohol is being metabolized within my system. I feel like it's not serving me in the same way that it used to, and I think that's just because I've been drinking for so long that it doesn't have the same effect. So yeah,
I think it's interesting you saying you've been drinking for so long. Is what's interesting about that is that unless we pause to actually analyze like how we're living and kind of objectively look at it, we're just going to keep going on and on. Like, you kind of need to pause and be like, hang on a minute, why am I drinking? Do I want to drink? Do I want to just go along with this thing that's seen as the norm?
And it's almost like people who don't drink are like, oh, what's wrong with that person? Or
yeah, you know, and I used to be one of those people. Like, I'll put my hands up and say, like, 10 years ago, if someone came over and we were having some drinks and they were like, oh, I'm not drinking tonight, or I don't drink, I would be like really judgmental and be like, weirdo, like, you're no fun. Or I wouldn't say that to them, but in my head I'd be like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, what's happened to them?
Which I feel really bad for now, but it's something I think becomes easier as you get older not to be so judgmental.
So our first soiree into the world of sobriety was through doing a month-on-month off for about 2 years.
It was 2 years, yeah.
But what we did in the end, unfortunately, was that system didn't really work after a while, because we would just make up for lost time on the drinking month. So January might be sober, February would be drinking, March might be sober, blah, blah, blah. We would drink twice as much on the drinking months. So that meant that that system didn't really work for us after a while, because we found ourselves drinking all through the week. So we wouldn't have really, you know, it just didn't work. So we tried to do things like, oh, let's only drink when we're out, or let's have a golden ticket. None of these things worked. We just had to commit to like just being completely sober. So we listened to a really good podcast by was it Andrew Huberman?
I'll link it
in the show notes. All about, he really goes into the macro details of why it's not good to drink.
It's really interesting, actually. He goes into a lot of the science of what happens specifically in your body and your brain when you've had a drink, or a couple of days after you've had a drink. And for me, that podcast, he was trying not to be too negative, I think. But for me, that podcast really kind of woke me up a little bit. And I was like, actually, I do want to commit to this.
It's so funny, because I told my friend Phil, who I go to the gym with I said to Phil, you got to listen to this podcast. It's all about drink. He's a drinker, a big drinker. Not a big drinker, but he just likes his drink. And I said, you got to listen to this podcast, mate, because he's super into health as well, into all sorts of, you know, been dipping with me for 2 years. And yeah, he's really into kind of all that stuff. But anyway, so I said, listen to the podcast. He goes, oh, listen to it, Steph. It's really changed, you know, my life. And I was like, oh, why? What, you're not drinking? He's like, no. He talks about how, like, you can negate some of the hangover if you were to drink... what are they called?
Electrolytes.
He goes, because one of the tips he gives you is basically to reduce a hangover or drink electrolytes before you go to bed or something, or have a drink and then electrolyte, drink and then electrolyte. And he goes, oh, since I've been doing that, I'm not having hangovers. It's great. I'm glad you got something out of it, mate. But
I think for me as well, like when we were doing the month on, month off, I had really just started getting into like daily journaling, like gratitude journaling, as cheesy and like... Mm. I don't know, cliche as it is. And for me, looking back on those journal entries, I could see such a difference on the months that we were drinking and the months that we were not drinking. Mentally, on the months where we weren't drinking, I could just see a difference in how I felt. Mm. And it became really clear after 2 years that it wasn't good for my mental health. Mm. And also there'd be some times where I had this little prompt in my journal where it says, how could I have made today better? And there were a few times where I would literally write, not drinking. Mm. But I felt like I didn't have the willpower to just say no. And I felt like sometimes I would be drinking because you cracked open a beer and I didn't even want a beer, but I would just do it because you were doing it. And I kind of had to start catching myself in that behavior. And it was really hard to be like, actually, I don't really feel like drinking. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, let's talk about some of the things that we did enjoy about it. So what we liked about drinking and some of the good and the bad about it. So for me, it was what I liked about it was there was almost like a 2 glasses of wine or a 2 pints feeling, like a warm glow, like a hug. There was this pocket of time that lasts about 20 minutes to half an hour. That's all it lasts, where you're just in this lovely... a disassociated space where you just feel free to,
you don't have any inhibitions,
the anxieties, it releases any inhibitions, and you just feel like, I wish I could always feel like this, but the problem is it's only very short-lived, and you chase that all through the night because you want to get back there, and then it just goes downhill from there. That's what I found, is like it just gets worse and worse. So that I do miss. And yeah, we saw you trying to say something.
I feel like for me, it's the same. So like after a glass or two of wine, just the silliness and the looseness and the not really caring about any stresses. Mm. Like I love that fast track to that feeling. Mm. And I wish that where I would really like to get to would be to be the type of person that can just have one or two and then be like, okay, I'm done now. Mm. Like, that's it.
When you feel that way, you want to cling on to it, though, exactly. Don't you? You're desperate to cling on to it. Like, I want to feel like this, and I don't want this feeling
to
stop.
It's always me that goes, let's crack open another bottle, and we know we're going to finish the next bottle, you know?
Yeah. So there's also, like, we went to London recently, and we took Grayson to a theatre on his birthday, and we just walked past a golden pub. It was, like, shining golden windows, and it had, like, just, like, it was just so warm looking, and you saw people inside, and it just had that, I don't know, it felt like a mecca. You just wanted to go in there and just collapse it in this pub and just get a nice big
red wine.
Red or something, and just sit and have a chat. You know, that you miss being able to just drop into those pubs.
I think it's the social side of it as well, because I don't know about you, but I find that like in the evening, if you're going to see a friend, it's like you kind of want to go out. Mm. But if you don't want to eat, it's not like there's many places you can go for a hot chocolate or a peppermint tea, you know? Mm. It's all, our culture is very centered around drinking and getting drunk.
Well, luckily for us, they've come along, well, not so much for you because you don't really like it, but luckily for me, they've come a long way in terms of making non-alcoholic beer taste really good.
It's not that I don't like it. I guess I don't really see the point of it. I don't drink beer enough
I
would
taste.
Want non-alcoholic beer, but there's other non-alcoholic drinks that I now like, but I would only have them in replacement if it was like an occasion, so I felt like I was having a drink, if that makes sense. I wouldn't have it like just randomly on the weekend.
See, I would drink a non-alcoholic beer now on a Monday or a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Because it's just, yeah. And there's some really good ones out there. There's some amazing ones.
You should link maybe to a couple of your favourites.
Yeah, sure.
In case anyone's struggling with Dry January and they just want that taste.
The taste as well, just of booze, like of a good red wine, how well it goes with food, brings food alive, what a whiskey tastes like. This is the one thing that I found as well, is that you realize how prevalent it is in everything, drinking and everything. Like whenever we seem to watch any TV program or film, there's always for me, the trigger is like a man drinking a whiskey. Whenever I see a man drinking a whiskey, a straight whiskey, I'm triggered by it. I'm like, oh my God, that really gets to me. Because I want
to
be that man.
It doesn't normally get to me, but I watched a show recently. Oh, what was it called? It was really good. It was about High Fidelity, and it has that girl in it that I love. And in the series, her character owns an old record shop and she's always drinking whiskey on ice. Mm. And like, I don't even miss whiskey, and that made me miss whiskey.
Yeah.
Just because of the act of it. And like, she's just there in the evening listening to a record and having a nice whiskey in her pants. And I'm like, oh,
that's what jealous. That's what a lot of people who struggle with alcohol struggle with, is the romanticizing the ceremony of drinking. So they say that's what you do when you think about drinking. You don't think about the actual drink. You think about the context of the drink. You think about
the
sound of pouring it in, the clinks of the ice as they fall into the glass. They think about, you know, that first kind of hit when you take it and that taste swelling around your mouth. You think about all of that kind of stuff.
I think what's really helped us personally is replacing an evening glass of wine with something that we know we're going to look forward to. So for us, it sounds really boring, but it's usually either a peppermint tea or a good hot chocolate.
Mm.
And we found like the perfect hot chocolate, and usually we'll have a plate of nachos, not the healthiest replacement, but my God, they are so good. And I genuinely really look forward to them. And I think for me, it's like when the kids go to bed and it's the end of the day and you're a bit tired, it's that act of like relaxing with something, you know?
Yeah.
And you don't get to the same place that you get to if you were to relax with a glass of wine. But I think you do eventually when you let yourself have like half an hour to decompress just naturally.
One of the other annoying things that you have to do, you have to factor in when you do become sober, is that you have to explain it to people, which is really tricky. So,
oh, that's my worst thing
so
about it.
People assume that, oh, let's go for a pint or let's go for a drink. And you're like, oh, I don't drink, but we can, you know, that's tricky, because then there's always this, especially I think with women, because they assume that you might be pregnant or trying for a baby, and there's loads of this kind of hidden reasons of what it could be. If it's for a guy, they assume maybe you're a reformed alcoholic or something, you know. Or, you know,
I do feel the need to explain, not to my friends now, because I feel like I've kind of gone into quite a lot of depth with a few different people of the reasons why and how I feel, like physically feel so much better now. But if I go into a situation where it's maybe like someone's birthday party, or I don't know, like it's a work thing or something, and there's people I don't know there and they notice that I'm either not drinking or not drinking something alcoholic, I do feel the need to explain it.
Mm.
And you almost want to caveat it though. Like you almost, I feel like there's such a shame around feeling like you need to address your behavior with alcohol. It's almost like people just assume, oh, you're an alcoholic then.
Or you've had a problem with it, or there's got to be a deeper reason for this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the tricky part of this whole interaction is that you don't want to make them feel bad, like they're doing something they shouldn't be doing. So you don't want to say, I suppose a good tip would be to go in with a pre-prepared answer to that, like, oh, it's not good for my mental health if I drink, or something like that. But then the person's thinking, oh God, they've got issues with their mental health. So it's tough to know exactly how to say it without making that person, highlighting that person's, you know, maybe problem with alcohol.
Not that anyone should have to do this. And I think you do get to a place where you feel comfortable just saying, oh, I'm not drinking for XYZ reason. Mm. But a little hack, if you just don't want to have that conversation, is arrive a little bit later than everyone else. They've already had a drink and they don't really notice or care as much. And then go in with a drink already. Like, I normally like to have like a sound like such a twat, but I like to normally have like a tin of CBD or something like that, and I just turn the label around and cover it up with my hand, and then everyone just thinks that you've got a drink, so they don't really care or don't really pick up on it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, trick to leave before everyone just gets, like, really drunk.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're there for the sweet spot, basically, when everyone's quite charismatic and French interesting.
Exit. I'm a big French exit. Yeah, yeah, like, same. I love leaving places early.
Same.
I really like going somewhere, having a really good time, and then just leaving before I stay, you know, you get people who just stay to the bitter end. I've never been one of those guys. I'm always like, get in and out quickly. I think it's a way to do it. So I think the tricky thing is like, it's difficult because somebody might be like, oh, let's go for a pint. So you've got like less reasons to meet them. If you know what I mean? It's like, I suppose you could just reframe it as like, let's just go for a walk. I mean, I'd rather do that anyway than sit in a pub. I'd rather go for a walk with someone.
I've been doing that with a few of my friends. Instead of saying, oh, let's go for a wine next week, I'll be like, right, do you want to go for a class and then a smoothie? Or like, let's go for a really big long walk, or just come over for a coffee or whatever. You just end up doing different things. And for me, I found one of the really great things about giving up alcohol, which I didn't expect to be the case, was I thought that it would somehow not be great for my friendships, but actually I feel like my friendships have kind of thrived in that space, because you kind of tend to have like deeper, more meaningful conversations, you connect more honestly, you do things together that you maybe perhaps wouldn't have done before, and it kind of, I don't know, it feels like it builds up more of a foundation underneath a friendship.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I've got the two friends called Jason and Eva. And Eva and I love Eva, but we are, I suppose we're kind of different in terms of how we see things politically and ideologically. And if I'm drinking, I'm not very good at arguing because I'm sort of a bit like more loose, shoot from the hip. I'm not thinking.
Or you'll say things just for the effect of her being like, oh,
yeah, yeah,
okay.
Exactly. So whereas if we had a debate the other day and we actually just sat there at the table and it was like just a friendly conversation where we both met in the middle and actually agreed with each other, and it was lovely because we weren't getting drunk and getting all opinionated and getting fired up. So it was great. So it does, I know what you mean. It really does mean that you have these kind of deeper kind of connections with people when you're not drinking.
I would say as well that I actually prefer seeing my friends in these kind of situations rather than just going out and it being about drinking. Like, I really prefer it. I wish I had done it sooner. I wish that I had quit alcohol like 10 years ago, you know?
So the mental health side and the anxiety side, you see a huge, after about 2 to 3 months, it takes a while. It's not like you just take a few days off drinking, you're fine. It's like, it takes months to get it completely out of your system. But then you just find, hang on a minute, I just feel better. I feel like a sharper, less anxious, better parent, better husband, better friend. I just feel better, but like the optimum version of yourself when it kind of flushes out your system. Like, I've got far less anxiety now. There's a few reasons for that, but I think, you know, quitting alcohol is a tool in a toolbox of things that you can use to help combat things like anxiety and depression. There's no one answer. There's a toolbox with lots of different things in there, like cold water and sobriety and lots of different other things. But if you got enough tools in that toolbox to help with it, then, you know, then you're away.
I think particularly with anxiety though, going back to that podcast that you were talking about earlier, when he explained what happens chemically in your body when you drink and how it has a delayed reaction to give you that anxiety 3 days later, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And then so it's like this continuous cycle where you're like, oh, I feel anxious, I'm going to have a drink. Or, and then 3 days later, you'll feel anxious again. And I found that fascinating. And I wasn't expecting it to have such a delayed effect. I thought it would be like maybe the next day if you'd had a bit too much. Mm. Maybe that's when you would feel the anxiety. Make sure you definitely link that, because I think that would be really good for lots of people to listen to.
The sleep is improved by crazy amount as well. How I would still wake up sometimes with anxiety at like 4 a.m. in the morning. Like, that hasn't gone. But it's cyclical. It only happens sometimes. But when I wake up now, I've got manageable anxiety. Instead of when I'm drinking, it was like acute, crazy anxiety where it was just overwhelming.
You went through a really bad patch with that. Yeah, you would have to take sleeping tablets and stuff.
Yeah, and now it's manageable. Now I've slept the last few nights fine, but every now and again I'll still wake up. But with manageable, like just sort of lying there thinking, oh, okay, well, I feel all right. Rather than like, oh my God, everything's closing in and I'm going to die.
I feel like one thing for me as well that I really like about not drinking is my skin just feels and looks so much better. Like, I can just get away with not wearing foundation some days now. And like, I just feel like I don't think I was necessarily like aging, but I could see in my face if I'd had two or three wines the night before. I could just see in my face, my skin was dry. Like, I'd get like little lines down here. I've probably got the lines now, haven't I?
No, you don't.
I noticed even after like 10 days of not drinking, my skin just looked more plump. And I don't know if that's because I was also trying to make a habit of drinking like tons more water every day. That's probably got something to do with it too, but it was quite a nice like instant reward. Do you know what I mean?
We're better parents now because of being sober, and we're more patient with the kids.
Oh God, I feel like my so patience, much more patience has with them. Like just improved by like 100%.
There's always a snap point with a parent, and getting to that snap point when you're living a sober life it's far more difficult to get to than when you're kind of dealing with some kind of stress
from being hungover. I also think there's so much that we try to kind of lead by example with the kids. Like, we'll try and read in front of them. We'll make sure they know that we think that fitness is really important and that we're eating like a balanced diet and stuff. And I just think for us, not that I'm like trying to shame or make anyone feel bad, but for us being at this point now, I'm glad that they're not seeing us drink, because I'm like, I want to live a really long, healthy life. Like, that's my aim going forward, is to live the healthiest, longest life. I want to see grandchildren be born, hopefully, if we're lucky enough, if anyone will put up with our boys. And so for me, like, that's something that I really want to try and kind of install in them from an early age, is how important you get one body. Yeah. You get one body and you really need to take care of it.
Mm. So hangovers, they're out the window now. It's such a lovely feeling to wake up on a Saturday and Sunday. I had this moment when I went to London a few weeks ago to see a good friend, Zach and Ryan, and I stayed at Ryan's house, and I was out in Soho that evening and I wasn't drinking, and I got back to Ryan's and I sort of stayed up late with Ryan and I went to bed and I woke up in the morning, and all I could remember really in my immediate memory was the night out in Soho. So I should have sat up in bed and just been like, oh my God, my head, I feel awful. Because there is that moment when you wake up thinking, how bad is it going to be? And you sit up and you think, oh God, it's bad. And to sit up and be like, oh my God, I had a really good night out. I saw my friends. I went out in Soho and I feel great now in the morning. I feel a bit maybe tired, but you know, because I didn't maybe have enough sleep, but I feel great. Like,
I remember you saying to me that weekend that you almost felt drunk just from the energy of like other people around you. Like, just the vibrancy of like being in that environment made you feel like more energized.
Yeah, so I just love not feeling that hungover, because there's some days that we just crave the day being gone, because we're like, I can't wait for it not to be today and it be tomorrow, for this hangover not to be this unbearable. So you're just wishing that day to pass, and it's like, we only get a few of these days before we're in a vacuum of nothingness. So it's like, well, let's make every day count. And if you're sort of, when you're drinking, it feels almost like you're stealing the future. You know what I mean? You're having a great time then and there, but at a cost to what comes in the next day or two.
I also find that I'll be honest, like, I still do miss, I don't miss anything really other than wine. I miss wine still.
I miss it all.
I In the winter, I love a red. Summer, I love a nice rosé with a big old ice cube in it. Like, I really miss wine with food and wine with my friends. And yeah, I miss wine.
Yeah.
But 7 months in, well, we're nearly 8 months in now, I literally have nightmares sometimes about drinking or being drunk or being hungover. I'll have nightmares about it. And I wake up and I'm like, God, I'm so glad I'm not doing that. And it's like my brain's reaffirming to myself, you're making the right decision, which is so strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
That your brain would do that.
Another big bonus is how much money you save. Alcohol has got so expensive right now. And a bottle of wine is, you know, what, 10 quid?
Is it?
Pints are, they'll be £10 before you know it, a pint now. So it's just, it's getting insanely expensive. And with the cost of living crisis, with like inflation rampant,
I feel like
you want to cut back and save money, it's a good excuse.
I feel like as well, not only that, but like if you're saving money by not drinking and not going out drinking, you can, if you're not just saving generally, you could spend that money on other things that you enjoy.
Cake.
Things that are really good. Well, going for a coffee and a cake with a friend rather than a glass of wine, or like going to an exercise class, or like, I don't know, like a book, or, you know, like stuff that you really enjoy that isn't necessarily like a necessity.
And I would also say that it is I would honestly say it's probably the best thing decision we've ever made for our relationship.
Yeah,
because every savage argument we've had over the years has been fueled by booze.
Yeah,
we've taken.
We
the
had
booze
a point,
away.
Didn't we, where we were like, okay, our absolute maximum to not argue is a bottle of wine and two cocktails, and then after that, it's like no,
it wasn't a bottle of wine and two. cocktails.
It was a bottle of wine and two.
Can't be two cocktails. They're bloody strong. Cocktails are strong. Two cocktails will get you smashed.
That's what we decided.
No, it was a bottle of wine. It was one bottle of wine.
No, it wasn't one bottle of wine. It was one bottle of
wine. We don't drink cocktails.
When we went out, that's what it would be.
I'd never have a cocktail. I'd hardly ever. I could count how many times I've had a cocktail on probably two hands.
Steph, you know,
mind you,
whiskey,
old fashioned is a cocktail.
Yeah, old fashioned is a cocktail.
Yeah.
That's like a
fuck
ton of whiskey.
Yeah, true. We'd be at our very limits.
I don't drink cocktails.
We'd be at our very limits with two cocktails and half a bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Oh God, that would be danger. We're in danger zone with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been the best thing for us, I think. I miss the silliness between us and the fun that we have. And the looseness that we have. There's a lot that it's taken away from our relationship.
Yeah. But I always feel like we're very lucky in terms of we both want to do this, like we've kind of grown into this journey together rather than just one of us being like, I don't want to drink anymore, and then the other one still wanting to do it. That would be so much harder. But I feel like we're quite lucky in terms of I think it's brought us closer together doing this really hard thing together.
And I think it's that on that basis it's really good for your mental fortitude. So it's good for you to be able to have something that you love and adore and want and resist it.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing to be able to do in life, is say, I want that thing, but I'm going to deny it. I'm going to deny having it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to get up on a Sunday morning and stand in a hot, cold river with a bunch of middle-aged men, but I'm going to do it because that's what I need to do. And so that's good to have a test of mental fortitude. I've another note here I've got is that it's a good way to further define your wants and needs, because as you grow older, I think your wants and needs are very much separated two entities, and what you need and what you want should be seen as completely different things. And you should always focus more on what you need than what you want, and not confuse the two.
I would say this is probably a really obvious positive to come out of it, but I physically feel like the best version. I don't mean in terms of like how I look. I mean in terms of my body and how it feels and how much energy I have and the functionality and the sleep and the like mental clarity. Mm. Everything physically has improved for me.
If you think about what you're doing with ethanol, which is the alcohol, which is obviously what gets you drunk, it's poison. It essentially is a poison, and you are slowly poisoning yourself all throughout the week or for years. And so that's going to have an effect. And when you're younger, you can bounce back from it pretty well. But as you get older, you need to readdress it. And I think what's important for people to do, without sounding like a preachy twat, is that you probably don't have a problem if you could switch it off for a month and not think about it. But you probably do have a bit of a problem if you would find that extremely difficult.
Or if you don't feel like you could go into a social situation and be like, oh no, I'm just not today, not drinking today.
Yeah. But it's something empowering about that.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to do it. No, I'm not going to do this thing that I'm expected to do.
Do you know what I kind of like about it though, is that, I don't know, I've always, felt like a bit of an outcast. And so for me, I kind of, sometimes I kind of like that. And I'm like, I'm not going to do this thing that everyone's doing.
To be honest with you, I think that served us well over the past few years.
Oh, shush.
Yeah, yeah. Let's not go into that, but it's good.
Save that for another time, maybe in 20 years.
Yeah. I think, you know, I haven't ever regretted making a decision, which is not the decision that everybody else is making, you know, put it that way. And I think that that's good to be able to walk into a social situation and think, this is going to be really difficult for my social anxiety, but I don't care. I'm going to put myself through it.
Yeah, and I think it's really hard for people, particularly in recent years, because we have all been isolated. Mm. And so if you're someone who's naturally quite an introvert or you just don't enjoy big social situations, it's almost become harder.
Mm.
And I don't want this podcast in any way to come across as like us sort of preaching.
I know, I'm really conscious of that.
And say, judging anyone who drinks. Like, if you drink and you enjoy it and it adds value to your life, then
it's worth saying that I don't regret the years I had of drinking. Like, if I could go back, I wouldn't have changed it because we had some amazing times drinking. It's not like, but at my age now, in the amount I've drunk over my life, it's just time for me to readdress
it. In my life.
But it's time for me to readdress it. God, I don't know what that was. But yeah, I feel like that's what's... But I don't, you know, we had so much fun going out and boozing for a while. But it just comes a point in your life where you have to, you know, you got to realise that the party might be over.
I think for me as well, like, I don't know if I will ever go back to drinking occasionally, and if I do go back to drinking, I want it to be a very occasional celebratory thing. It's not going to be like every weekend. It's going to be, oh, we're going away for Steph's birthday and we want to have like a glass of wine with dinner or something. That's the point that I would really love to be comfortable at. And so I don't want to say, oh, I'm sober forever, but also I am very committed. So
My mission
is just
sober,
a journey.
My mission is sober for 1,000 days. And then after 1,000 days, I think I might do something like only never drinking in the UK, but only drinking when I'm not in the UK. Something along those lines. So if we do go to Greece or whatever,
on
a road trip or somewhere like that.
All the everything around you, it's like the perfect situation to complement what you're doing.
Yeah.
Then I think for us, we're really similar in that way, I think.
But the minute it's got its foot in the door,
that's
the problem.
Thing. That's the thing. And I think once I've done a year, am I going to want to wreck it?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Is it worth it?
Yeah.
Because it's quite an accomplishment, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it'd be interesting to see how you feel after a year. Yeah. I think 1,000 days is about 2.5 years, something like that. So we'll see. I'm only about 7 months in, so I've got a long way to go. So we've got some tips on things that you can do if you want to, I think flip your bit of paper over there, because you should have it on the back. Things you can do if you want to try it. Things like don't have booze in the house is a simple one, but that's what we had booze in the house for months. Some of the beautiful whiskey in the house.
Yeah, your mum bought us some whiskey for
Christmas. Yeah, stayed there for ages. Aww. That had to go. Yeah, so you don't have alcohol around you. And then you'll save a lot of money. So I think it's important to treat yourself every now and again with something to say, well done. You know,
you
get through a week, you've saved probably 50, 60 quid. Go and treat yourself. Do something nice.
Yeah.
You know, get yourself some, I don't know, massage or something. You know, just something to reward you for...
He said I should reward myself.
A lot of people like apps to track their days. They like the little rewards that the app gives them.
The little dopamine of like, you've done it.
Yeah, exactly that.
Also, on that note, I think doing it with someone, if you can, is... I mean, I don't know how I could have done it and still be on the journey if you weren't doing it too. I definitely would have caved. Yeah. I definitely would have been like, oh fine, I'll just come for a wine with you, or whatever. It's much easier if you have someone like in your corner, like cheering you
on. If you suggest it to them, they'll probably initially say, no effing way, I'm not doing that. But what you need to do is plant a seed. A seed for me was planted when I was, you know, when I spoke to my mate Ryan in my 20s about him doing Dry January. That seed started almost, you know, probably 20 years ago, and it's grown to fruition now, and that's all you're doing. So expect resistance, but then just plant the seed with people.
I think for me, I listened to a podcast, I think it was a Saturn Returns podcast, a couple of years ago, and the topic was sober curious, and I'd never heard that phrase before. And I can't remember who the guest was, but they were talking about their journey and how they used to have blackouts and stuff, and I've never done that, but it did make me question then my behavior and my relationship with it. But yeah, it's taken years to kind of get to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to do this. You know?
We talked about it before, but have alternatives. So a good hot chocolate or some nachos or whatever. Like a,
you should link to Bare Bones hot chocolate.
Yeah, Bare Bones hot chocolate. And
so freaking good.
Treat yourself. If you do a couple of weeks, treat yourself to a Velvetizer from Hotel Chocolat. They're about 100 quid, I think. And then Bare Bones hot chocolate. Get that ordered in.
Oh, every night, babes. Yeah. It is so
That's a good alternative.
Good. Yeah. It's so good.
Really thick, nice, dark, like proper nice chocolate, yeah. Hot chocolate with milk. Oh, so good. Set an intention is always good as well. So, I'm going to try and do 3 months. I'm going to try and do, a month is okay, but I think 3 months is better. That's when it's really out your system. If you can do 3 months, you're doing really, really well and see how you feel after that. And like you do a lot of notes and like journaling.
Yeah.
It would be good to start doing around this. You don't have anything else. Use non-alcoholic drinks. That's a big one. Yeah, like I said, get a fridge full of non-alcoholic booze.
Yeah, non-alcoholic booze or just something that you really like to drink. Mm. Like it could be, I don't know. Like there's a Coke alternative that I like called Karma Cola, and like just some like a tin of that or something is. It feels like a treat, you know.
Yeah. But. If you are sober curious and you do want to try it, then you've got our back. Like, as a couple of big drinkers who loved going out and getting pissed, factoring in all the pros and all the cons, we think it's been like an amazing decision for us personally. Mm.
And I think that gives you a lot of opportunity to grow in terms of you're just way more present generally. So you notice how you kind of react and speak with other people and how your body feels and what you're eating. And
do you remember when we were drinking how desperate we were to have alcohol when we were ever in a social situation?
Yeah,
when we went to farm camp at Tim's and they had this kind of like off-grid weekend thing where it was like you were doing things like loads of meditation and stuff like that through the week, we were just desperate to get alcohol, weren't we? We were like, when can we get a drink?
Yeah,
and it was just craving it so badly. And yeah, that wouldn't even come into our minds now. It just wouldn't be a thing, you know.
It is nice when you get to that point where you're just like, that's not something I do anymore.
Yeah. It's a good place to get to, isn't it? But yeah, so...
But it is a hard journey if you are like us, if you really enjoy it and you feel like you enjoy it a little bit too much. It is hard, but the rewards are so worth it.
And I would also say that, you know, it might not be an all or nothing person. If you're the sort of person who can be like, oh, once every few weeks I might have a drink, you know, that's fine, good. You probably don't have anything to address. But if you're like us, where we're like, let's crack open another bottle or let's have another cocktail, and you just can't stop, you don't know when your off button just disappears, and you just end up drinking multiple bottles of wine a week and whiskey and vodka and all this kind of stuff, and then I think is a good time to address what you're doing.
I think it would be good to, in the show notes, just link a couple of like helplines and maybe some online information in case anyone is struggling and they would like to seek help from a professional. Because we've talked about how our experience has been, but obviously like we're not in a position to advise anyone or like, do you know what I mean? It's a big journey to go through. So let's link a couple of
And there are so many people out there to support you, and so many people that have got your back, and so many people when you tell them you don't drink, like if you go out and you meet somebody who's out in a social situation, they don't drink too. There's a sort of such an amount of respect you have for that person, because you know how hard it is and you know how difficult what they've had to go through. And so you'll find that as well, where you'll be like, oh wow.
And also when you are in it, the non-drinking community is much bigger than you think. Like you find people with similar interests and just a similar kind of outlook on life in places that you wouldn't expect, you know. So it might be a bit lonely at first, but just know that eventually you kind of find people who are the same as you.
And good luck, man. That's the main thing. Good luck. And if you fall off the wagon, don't worry. You can just jump back on it again. And that's what we did. We tried it for, you know, it took us 2 years.
2 years, man.
2 years of practicing, of sparring to get to the point where
we could actually go into the ring. I still remember my last glass of wine, knowing it was my last glass of wine,
Okay, well, thanks very much for listening to our podcast about sobriety and being sober curious in our lives, our 7 months in of being sober. We'll probably do another one of these probably when we do a year, when we've done a year update. Yeah, we'll do a year update. Yeah. So in about 4 or 5 months, we'll do another one.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully some of the tips helped and some of the advice helped. And I'd love to read some of your comments on this on this podcast. But yeah.
And again, if you are a drinker, absolutely no shade. Like, no shade at all. Fun. I'm just jealous.
You do you, honey boo. Yeah.
I love it when you say that. Say it again.
No, I'm not saying it again. It was really camp and it's made me feel a bit demasculated.
You do you, honey boo.
Can I not say demasculated?
Probably not.
I can say that.
I just don't know anymore.
I can say demasculine.
Anyways,
sure.
Let's finish this up before we offend loads of people.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Thanks so much for listening. Thanks, everyone. Go check out the show notes and we will see you all very soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.